We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the Advanced Sports Analytics Show here on RotoGrinders, brought to you by Jock Market. Stop throwing your money away. It's time to check out Jock Market, the app where daily fantasy becomes a stock exchange. Buy and sell shares of players in real time for real money. Download now for a 100% deposit match up to $50 using the promo code GRINDERS. And get this, if you don't turn a profit this week, Jock Market is running back their first market guarantee to cover your losses this week. Download Jock Market in the app or play stores or check out jockmarket.com. That's jockmkt.com. And use the code GRINDERS for a 100% deposit match up to $50 on your first deposit. I'm Jordan Cooper, a.k.a. Blenderette, Blender HD, if you want to follow me there on Twitter. Joined by the man behind the numbers, the dials, the models, the levers, the divots, I don't know, the hamster wheels at Advanced Sports Analytics. It's Stuart Gibson for we always say it's an interesting week, right? It's an interesting week. We do have a week where We have 12 games, so it's not like there are like that many buys, but it seems like the highest total teams are not on this slate. So there's only two games that are over 50 total. On a week like this, are in your simulations that you run, as far as like the top stack percentage, do you see much more flatter results, or does it still come out that, you know, the teams with the highest totals are still substantially higher over the lower total ones?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, you are right. It does seem like we kind of say every week is interesting. Perhaps a good exercise would be to like qualify that with what about it is interesting. I would say, so to me, like what stands out this week is, like you said, like a lot of the power stacks, power offenses, and a lot of like the really, I think, talented skill players, you know, with KC, Seattle of sorts being off the slate.
Well, Seattle's still on the slate, but they just have Geno Smith at quarterback.
Right. Yeah. You're right. I'm sorry. So they're not like in play. I'm looking at the Dallas not on the slate. So yes, the And then also, like you said, the low totals, the simulated scores have been flatter in previous weeks. Like, to me, like when there is a dearth of high total games, if there is one game that really stands out as exceptional, like I think that can create unflat very, very skewed results. That has not been the case this week. Seeing a lot of I think one thing that's interesting is we simulate across understanding that there are some lineups that are going to double stack, some that'll single stack, some will bring backs, some will not have bring backs, some will bring back 1, 2, 0. And I think in this week, I'm seeing not super strong returns for just stacks in general. I'm not really sure what to make of that, other than that maybe it's a week where I don't think like not stacking is like what the recommendation would be, but perhaps not going super hard on like large game stacks, maybe being more open to single as opposed to double stacks, potentially being open to no bring backs. I don't know that I have like a clear hypothesis as to what that is a function of.
I think I do.
It could be that, you know, the chalkiest and probably best value quarterback on the slate is, a running quarterback. So when you sim things out and get single stack, or sorry, no stack hurts, perhaps those are outperforming stacked lineups. And just the fact that there, aren't the traditional stack teams that we like, Kansas City, Russ Wilson, Seattle, Dallas, stuff like that. Of course, you have Los Angeles, who we like stacking, but they're in kind of a weird matchup. So I don't, that's just some general observations that I'm seeing kind of as I run the numbers this morning, and maybe some context as to why we might be seeing that. But sounds like you have kind of a clear thinking as to why that might be. I'd be interested to hear kind of how you see that playing out.
I think it's a product of two things. One, the totals are closer to one another, right? So we have a lot of games in like this mid 40s range, and lower scoring games are not as good for the ceiling of stacks, meaning that having multiple players in a game score 30 plus points, right? There may be one, but there may be one in this game and one in that game and one in this game, less so than the combination of two teammates being 60 points, 50 to 60 points combined. So one may get 30 and the other gets 15. And that happens in three or four games where the stack isn't as necessary. And then also it's a byproduct of more efficient pricing. As the season goes on, the pricing gets much more efficient. That if I told you that the Brady stacks, that Godwin and Evans were both 4,000, like obviously the Tampa Bay double stack would show up as like a top possible, right? If Stephon Diggs was 6,600 and not 8,100, you'd see the Bills up there more, because for the price consideration of the double, the price is cheap enough that their ceiling is worth playing. I think on this slate, the product of the pricing makes the double stacks, where I go through the projections, both our Gridiron IQ projections as well as the Blitz. And in each game, there's like, one or two guys that are projected, well in comparison to their salary. But there aren't many games where it's like six guys like project over expectation, where it's like, no, like, I want to play a double with two bringbacks, type of thing, because they all project well. It just seems like you go through game by game and it's like, oh, I can pay the quarterback with this wide receiver. And then if I do the double stack, I'm going to be sacrificing 2 points in projection by doing so. So like, there's a lot of those. And obviously, as long as the game goes over its total, those doubles can absolutely hit, because that's what you're not aiming for median outcomes. But I think in the simulations, that's what you're seeing. When you see 55 point totals and two guys in the game are $800 too cheap, like that those sim scores are going to have to go up, because you're now able to afford like the best projected one-offs that have most likelihood of hitting their ceiling. And it makes, one stack 17% likely, and then the next one be 8, I think on this slate, because of the totals being closer and not multiple pieces of a game being as high projected, that you're more likely to see, from median perspective, like more of these single stacks, non-run backs, a little bit less correlated lineups, because the correlation isn't worth like sacrificing 2 points in projection to add the double stack when you just play the better projected play there and you have like 10 of them to choose from.
Yeah. So with a week like this, lost my train of thought there. Oh, yes. So yes, with the more efficient pricing, in theory, it becomes more difficult to identify value. You get kind of flatter ownership. I guess you have kind of this flatter ownership structure with the convergence to more efficient pricing. Is your inclination to take that increased pricing efficiency and say, all right, good. It's most sensible now since I have less confidence in any one player breaking the slate or just being like a supreme value. My inclination is to become more spread out, more even with my ownership. Or conversely, you could say, okay, well, the field is going to be more spread out and thin across players. Excellent opportunity for me to go overweight on specific players that I really like that are just not like no one's going to get huge ownership, right? So like on the one hand, maybe that is for a reason. On the other hand, it's potentially an opportunity to be very overweight on, and you don't even have to go like, you know, on some weeks you have to go 50% ownership to be twice the field on a player that you really like. But on a week like this week, it only feels like you need to go up to like 40 or so to be like twice the field for medium to large size tournaments. Of course, you know, small field that you're going to have slightly more condensed ownership.
Well, I think on field on slates with more spread out ownership, I'm more likely to take advantage of correlation than I would otherwise, because there's that, those three levers of DFS: projection, correlation, and leverage. Like that leverage lever is kind of flimsy. Right. There's not much leverage to be had by if you're not going to play this guy, you play the negatively correlated guy. Like, well, no, like if no one's more than 22% owned, like how much am I gaining by doing that? I'm getting something. Yeah, sure. But I think I'm gaining more with the correlation lever, that if I have, you know, seven guys that all project similarly in the same, you know, range, same, you know, salary adjusted value, like, why aren't I just playing the correlated ones to each other? Because I think the field is more likely to try to pick and choose. And I'm more likely to just say, I'm going to play four of these games and stack them up and let those be the ones that go over their total, then try to pick and choose. I just think I'm not going to get it right often enough to kind of pick out. If there's 12 guys that are all mostly efficiently priced, like, can I pick the three that do well and have them spread out? Like, how many different combinations do I need? I think I'm more with you that I'm going to take shots where I think the shots are, where I think the ownership isn't going, a little bit more so than not. And then on top of that, add the correlation. So if I'm right on that one thing, I'm more likely to be right on these other three things in combination. Then try to just make 150 combinations of just like, well, here's lineups that all project within 3 points of each other. Any one of these 150 could hit as all one-offs. Like, I just don't think there's a competitive advantage in doing that because the pricing is efficient. None of those lineups are different from any other lineups that could be built. So I can't pull that leverage lever. It's weird to say. I think I'm more likely. You say that correlation won't matter as much from a projection standpoint, but from a strategic standpoint, it matters more because there's no leverage. There's no places. There's no like Derrick Henry is 1,000,000% owned, so I'm going to play AJ Brown. There's none of that. Like maybe Daryl Henderson is the highest owned player, but I even don't think he's going to get past 25% ownership. So like, and then Kupp is going to be owned. Like, where do I get Rams leverage? I don't know. I mean, like, it just seems like I'm foregoing a lot of those leverage strategy dynamics, but that also means I gotta go somewhere, right? I mean, you don't suggest I just play the 9 one-offs and just that's it. I mean, you can, From a mathematical perspective, you can. So that's what your simulations are probably picking up on. But from like a pragmatic point of view, I'm more likely to just get a game right to some extent than just very similar to baseball. Right. Yeah, sure. Can you pick out the eight home runs, the two home run games in 14 games? I guess it's possible. That would be the optimal way to do it. But I'm much more likely to just take five batters from a team and go, I hope the Braves put up 14 runs today and I get enough points.
Yeah. All right. Good talk. Well, let's
get into it.
Into the games. Yeah.
Okay. First game on the docket, highest total game on the slate currently. Didn't open that way. It opened 47.5. It's now up to 51. It is the Titans at the Colts. The Colts are a 2.5-point favorite now, 26.75 implied total for the Colts, 24.25 for the Titans. We just got word that Julio Jones will be out. He was questionable. I don't think he even practiced all week. So that's going to open up in the projections a little bit more for A.J. Brown. We don't have the ownership in this game to be that dramatic yet. I think with the Julio news, that's going to go up. We have Pittman as the highest owned player in this game currently, 17% projected owned. The quarterback's not so much. Do you think that the most obvious way to play these are single stacks? Like Wentz, Pittman, Brown, or Tannehill, Brown, Pittman. And if you do Tannehill, Brown, you can play Jonathan Taylor instead. Or do you think that Derrick Henry, after his performance last week, even though the Chiefs got rolled, he didn't really get there. At 8,900, he's not projecting that well, first off. And he's not going to get that high. We have him at 10% ownership. Do you think that it's a very condensed way to play this game stack, or are you more inclined to just take shots on like the Mo Alley Cox, Ferkser, tight ends, Pascal and Naeem Hines? Cause I mean, they could throw to a lot of other people, but it's very, very clear who the core players in this game are. And then on top of that, do you think with the Julio news, this kind of, gains a little bit more ownership than it should?
Yeah, it's, I mean, I think my inclination would be to not, I'm sorry, I guess the Tennessee side, I don't mind just doing like Brown, Tannehill, Pittman, but we haven't updated for the Julio injury. So to me, that seems like a potentially significant shakeup. I would guess that the ownership on obviously Brown will rise, and I think, and the value as well. And I think with that, you're going to see a bit of an increase on Tannehill. I think there are other games that I would prefer on the slate. Usually Derrick Henry's like full fade or very nearly full fade for me. I think this is a slate where I'm actually not opposed to playing him, just given the lack of premier alternatives on the slate. But in general, I think, and especially if we see the ownership projection for like Tannehill and Brown rise, probably a game that I would want to be underweight on. I just think there are other spots that I would be interested in.
We also have to wait and see on T.Y. Hilton's status. He's questionable. So that could increase the projection on Pittman. But I think I'm with you. I have no problem with these guys as one-offs though. Like I'll play Jonathan Taylor, Michael Pittman, A.J. Brown, Derrick Henry even, like as one-offs. But I think as the game stack, it's just like, no other players in this game project well. So to build the double stacks, it feels like if I put in Ferkser or Mo Alley Cox, like I'm kind of playing for just a punt touchdown, which I guess is viable. But like the double stacks and stuff, like it just seems like this isn't the game. And when Pittman's 17%, if Pittman's going to be cheap chalk at 5,300, makes me even less inclined to play him as a one-off. So then like it takes me even more out of this game. And I think A.J. Brown, we have currently a 10% owned. I think with this Julio news, that's going to double at 6,900. A.J. Brown may end up being one of the highest owned. If we have A.J. Brown and Michael Pittman as the two highest owned wide receivers, like what am I gaining by stacking? Like, especially when none of the other players in this game kind of project.
Yeah, I mean, like we always talk about correlation as being something that you want to, I guess, you want to roster correlated pieces, but I mean, there's also sometimes value to fading correlated pieces, right? Like Brown and Pittman, who I think would have positive correlation, right? Just as opposing receivers, if that game kind of shoots out, naturally they both have an elevated probability of performing well. You know, the advantage to fading correlated plays is that if one fails, there's an increased probability that the other one fails as well. So, you know, if this game goes under significantly and Brown and Pittman are both close to 20% owned, you know, there's potential for like one in every three lineups to just be completely nuked as far as ability to win first place. You know, you can still, you know, if you have one of those guys and they put up a snowflake, of course you can still have kind of a min cash or, you know, not top half percent or whatever. But yeah, I don't know. To me, it just feels like a spot to be under. I think there are other lower total games that I would prefer to stack.
Right. No, I agree with you on the correlated part. If Pittman and Brown are both going to be like 20%+ owned, it makes more sense to either play them together or don't play them at all. And if you play them together, You're not even gaining that much because a lot of people will be playing them together. So yeah, no, I'm on your side, especially now with the Julio news. So I think AJ Brown's ownership is going to come up. The next game, the only other game with a 50+ total is the Buccaneers at the Saints. So we got basically the two dome games, right? Or the two games that are over 50. So 50.5 total. The Bucs are favored by 4.5. The Bucs have an implied team total of 27. The Saints implied team total of 22.5. Rob Gronkowski will be playing and Antonio Brown will be out. So that, you get another mouth to feed in the receiving game at the tight end position. Godwin figures at 6,400 to be one of the chalkiest receivers on the slate at 6,400. Kamara is viable, I guess, on the other side, but like nothing else. Like I ran a bunch, like I'm typically over on Brady stacks most weeks.
Yeah.
Right. I'm typically
same.
Brady's figured to be one of the highest owned quarterbacks on the slate. When I've stacked Tom Brady, it's been Tampa Bay with 30+ team totals, 32, 33. And typically without Gronk in. So I've stacked the two wide receivers and Antonio Brown would be one of them. We have Godwin at 21%, Fournette at 18%, Evans at around 10, Kamara around 10, Gronk at 6, but his ownership always comes in a little bit higher. Am I nuts to say that I will be the most under on this game than anything else? That if I were to play this game, to me, it's very straightforward. I think I'm more likely, if I do play this game, not play the stack and just play Kamara plus one of the Bucks as a secondary and not play Brady. Because I just think the pricing of, once you add Gronk's target share in there, I think Godwin and Evans on their own are fine. I think Fournette on his own is fine. But I think it's less likely that a combination of two of them plus Brady hit often enough in comparison to their ownership. And I think that's also a byproduct of the Saints defense being pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. I am with you. Like, I think it seems like every week we're pretty high on this Tampa Bay team with, you know, essentially to me, like I would rather play Tampa Bay in these blowout games. Like, I don't think they operate like traditional teams with regards to running the ball when ahead. Like, I almost think they do better at these kind of high implied total, high, you know, spread or blowout risk type games. And yeah, with Gronk back, one more mouth to feed. New Orleans is going to be tough on defense. They're going to be kind of slow on offense. To me, this seems like a game that just could drastically underperform, when for most Tampa Bay games, they kind of feel like spots where I don't even necessarily want to say that like the game is likely to go over, but it feels like in most spots, Tampa Bay is likely to overachieve kind of their implied total. We have Brady with one of the lower simulated scores at his position, which is odd because he's usually at the top of that metric on other slates. I think probably just a function of the target tree becoming a little more muddled and just the matchup and kind of game script.
I mean, it would be contrarian to play the other side of the game, but like Winston plus Kamara plus who? I mean, like the Saints wide receiver core is, I mean, maybe the worst in football. And I know that, you can't expect Kamara to have that great of a running game against the Buccaneers, but he will catch plenty of passes out of the backfield now. Is it worth it to even try the other side? Or if the Saints do well in this game, that I think the Buccaneers do well, and you'd rather just have the Buccaneers side. If the Saints put up 30 points, the game is 30-27, and the Bucs side still gives you more fantasy points than the Saints side. So, I mean, would you agree with me? Is there any reason to play a Saints stack as a contrarian play on the other side?
I don't think so. I mean, the kind of the player pool that I've put together at this stage in the week, like, have a good bit of Godwin is just one-offs, a sprinkling of Kamara here and there. And, really trying to take this game as just like a one-off or potentially like Godwin, Kamara, secondary stack. But it's weird. I mean, second highest total on a slate that's really lacking in high total games and just has very little appeal to me from a stacking standpoint.
Okay, let's talk about the two teams that have the highest implied team totals, just that they're in very big spread games. So the Bills currently have the highest implied team total at 31.5. It's a 49 total. They're playing in Buffalo against the Dolphins. Dolphins have a 17.5 implied team total. So that's a 2-touchdown favorite for the Bills. On the projections that I'm seeing in the Blitz, it's weird to say that the highest, I mean, we've said this like almost like for three games in a row. You figure I've been over on Allen stacks for most of this year when people are like, oh, I'd rather play Mahomes. I'd rather play this guy, Lamar Jackson. And I just go, let me just get Allen double stacks and just play them every week. This game doesn't even project that well. I'm assuming it's because Miami's passing defense is pretty good. Diggs is up to 8,100. They do throw Allen does spread the ball around enough. Am I nuts to say that I don't like the Bills stacks?
No, I think that seems reasonable. I kind of like the the Miami side of this game. I think it's weird. Like I'm trying to kind of
even with Parker, like you have to make a very, very big but. If Parker's back, then these prices are a little up there. But if Parker's not in, then I could make more of a case for what you're talking about.
That is true. It kind of does mess things up if he's in. It's weird. Like Buffalo is kind of in Tampa Bay's territory as far as willingness to pass from ahead. But I am seeing a lot of like Diggs, Beasley being brought back on, something like Tua Gesicki, Tua Waddle Gesicki, Tua just plain Waddle. Gaskin to me even I think is in play. I'm quite interested, I think, in the Miami side. I have them pegged as one of the more positive simulated scored stacks. So that would be a stack that I'd be pretty interested in. And even though, Tua had the big leak last week, we're not projecting him for a ton of ownership. Doesn't seem that you guys have super high ownership on him either. Next to no ownership, it looks like. So that would be a spot I think I'd be fairly interested in going with this. Probably like a single Miami single stack, just bring back with Diggs or Beasley, something like that.
Okay, the other high total, large spread game is with the Rams. Rams have a 30.5 implied team total at home against the Texans. It's a 46 total game. The Rams are a 15-point favorite over the Texans. Henderson is probably going to be the highest owned running back, but not like absurdly high owned. Let me just read these props to you. 7.5 receptions. Okay. And this is all positive juice, negative, which means it's in the upper range. 7.5 receptions.
Sorry, for what player, or is this a
I'll tell you that, but you'll know who the player,
Okay.
7.5 receptions, 96.5 receiving yards, anytime touchdown score, odds of -164. If you consider just that, the median, if it hits the prop, if this guy gets 8 catches for 100 yards and a touchdown, we're talking about 27 points. I don't think people realize that, like, 18% ownership for Cooper Kupp at 9,000 is like saying, like, in 2019, why aren't we playing Michael Thomas every week at 9,000 for the Saints when Breeze was there and everything? The ownership on this stack, the ownership on this game is not low. But I mean, Stafford 10%, Kupp 18%, Henderson 21, Cooks as a bringback 19, Robert Woods is lower, so he has 6, Van Jefferson 7, Higbee 2.8. I much prefer, out of all the other games from a projection standpoint, I have no problem with this game. The other games we were talking about, has a 46 total, but I think I'm much more confident in the prices of the Rams on how their offense is played against the Texans defense, that I think I'm going to have plenty of Matt Stafford stacks. And it's quite possible that I just have Stafford, Henderson, Kupp. And just basically give me all of that. And on a slate where the ceilings of a lot of games are going to be lower, I think I could beat everyone else, even with the chalky combination of those three, and let people try to just run me down.
Got it. This is a game I'm inclined to be under on. The spread, with the spread being the way it is, and I don't really see Los Angeles as being quite as pass happy as Tampa or Buffalo, not a spot I'm super interested in. And I think the Texans have at times been pretty anemic as far as a team that can bring it back, but they could, this it seems reasonable to me, like, could be setting up as kind of the Chiefs of the week with game total's too high, ownership's going to be too high, too expensive. How could I possibly play them? And, they go out and do what they're priced to do, and not as many people as you would think have them. And, they break the slate. Coming through with our numbers, though, they're not showing up as, like, super, super strong ROI generated on their stacks. But in a slate that's completely lacking in kind of stacks with kind of high confidence in putting up huge ceilings, they're probably one of the few stacks that could. So does seem reasonable to me, but they're not coming through super strong in our numbers as of now.
A way to get different in this is playing the Stafford stack like that and bringing it back with David Johnson instead of Brandon Cooks. Now that Mark Ingram is gone, Johnson can catch passes out of the backfield. He's 4,200. I know that sounds disgusting, but I think a lot of people will be playing. I think Brandon Cooks is going to be popular at 5,700. And for a team that's only has an applied total of 15.5, that doesn't sound great for a ceiling. I don't necessarily think the Rams need to be pushed. I think the Rams should just score 35 points, even if it's 35-3. And I'm more likely, if David Johnson is going to be single digit owned versus Cooks being almost 20% owned, that maybe that's a way to differentiate by still playing a chalky Ram stack and using, and maybe don't play Henderson. You just play Stafford, Kupp, Woods, or Stafford, Kupp, Jefferson, Johnson. And you do it that way. And then everyone's looking going, yeah, why didn't we play David Johnson when, David or Philip Lindsay, or like, yeah, I mean, these are disgusting plays, but in order to win GPP, sometimes you got to play disgusting plays.
Definitely. Yeah, I don't know that I have a clear, super clear understanding of what we're expecting Houston to do. We have projected as more or less a 50-50 split, with Johnson doing a lot more of the receiving work. Yeah, that checks out to me. I do agree with you. Like, I would prefer not to have much of the, I mean, not much of like Brandon Cooks. You know, it's going to be so chalky and the quite low team total. And yeah, I do like the kind of secondary Los Angeles receiver guys, Jefferson, Woods, I think could be a good way to kind of cut through the chalk that you are eating, I guess, with Woods. But I mean, sorry, with Cup, but like you are correct in that, just compared to previous weeks, like I don't even know if Cup is quote unquote chalk, you know, like
people don't believe they go and they go, how do I pay $9K for this guy? It's like, you're going to think of, why didn't I pay $9K for this guy?
Yeah. That being said, I mean, with Thomas, we rarely saw this. We rarely saw the Saints with, like, you know, two touchdown spreads. But yeah, no, he has had a role this year that is, probably one of the most prolific roles we've seen in quite some time. So, yeah, it could be one of those spots.
Okay, let's go to pluses and minus. So the games that that we haven't mentioned, that we're either going to be over on or under on, right? So so what's your first plus?
Yeah, so it's probably going to be the most popular quarterback. I mean, I think very likely Hurts is the most popular quarterback, but he's a guy I would want to still be overweight on. Just think there's tremendous value there. Going to want to single stack him with, or I mean, you could even do a double. Like, you could do Goddard plus Smith. I even think Hurts plus Sanders probably have some degree of.
Well, Sanders is going to be out, so it's going to be Kenneth Gainwell.
Right. Okay. Right. So yeah. Goddard, like Devonta Smith, look good to me. Think there's, we have Amon-Ra St. Brown still in Oktoberfest. Just closing out October with the Oktoberfest narrative. Do like St. Brown as a bring back option from the Detroit side. You know, of course, you can go with Swift as well. He's more or less functioning as a, wide receiver that gets goal line touches. So it is likely to be the most popular stack, or at the very least, the most popular quarterback. But I think one that I'm willing to work to be overweight on. So I have Philadelphia side pegged as a plus coming into the weekend.
Okay, but they're also going to be high owned also. So it's kind of they're but the same way that my plus for the Rams, kind of like, oh, they're chalk, but I'm still going to be over on this. How about a minus? A game that's most likely going to be owned that we haven't talked about that you probably would be under.
I mean, Tampa's kind of the minus I've pegged. I think Cincinnati would be a side that I would want to be under on. I don't think they're going to generate like huge ownership, but just given the spread of that game, given how run heavy they can be, still think Burrow's going to generate some ownership. Of course, Chase is coming off the big week. You know, T. Higgins, I think, should generate a good bit of ownership. I think to me, this is just a spot I want to be under on, and of course, you know, the Jets don't really appear as like a team that has super reliable bring back options. So not really a game I'm super interested in stacking up. Of course, you know, Chase or T. Higgins can kind of go out and on an island get enough points to sustain their price tag, but not sure that there's just enough competitive game time. And just given how Cincinnati tends to be when they're ahead, that would be a spot I'd want to be under on.
Yeah, that was my minus. I was all on board with the, I think there's gonna be too many Burrow, Chase, Higgins type of lineups. And I like the receivers as one-offs, you know, smattered amongst lineups, but not even making like Michael Carter secondaries. It's like, no, I'm probably just like a Bengals receiver and as a one-off. But you haven't gotten my plus. Can you guess my plus?
Yeah, I have two guesses. Really not in any particular order, but do like both the Chargers and the Falcons as potential stacking options. Not sure if either of those are where
you're thinking. You're close. Yeah, we didn't talk about the Chargers against the Patriots, who have a 49.5 total. I mean, obviously you could play Herbert plus Allen plus, I mean, I like that more as a single stack than a double stack, unless you play Jared Cook in the tight end spot. The problem comes in on the Patriots side. It's like almost none of their players outside of the running backs have a ceiling. Like Myers is serviceable, but do you see him putting up 30 points? And this will be the week that he catches all his touchdowns in one game, right? 4 touchdown game, right? Type of thing. But you're close on the Falcons. I actually prefer the other side of the game.
You like Carolina. Okay.
It's disgusting that to basically, I Sam Darnold trying to save his job. I think DJ Moore is going to go drastically underowned in this price range. And the Falcons passing defense, I have no problem attacking, right? I mean, no one has a problem attacking that. So looking at, I don't mind the other side of the game either. I mean, I like Ryan as well. Because I think both of these defenses aren't good.
Right.
But playing something like Darnold plus Moore plus Anderson, I know Anderson has gotten, in 4 games, he's gotten 34 targets. And he has nothing to show for it. So it's not like they're not throwing to him. So like at their prices, why can't they play? Darnold also has rushing upside, right? Because he's rushed touchdowns in. Why can't they play a double stack with a Ridley run back or the Pitts run back or the Patterson run back? Or I play the Ryan side with the Chuba Hubbard run back type of thing. Like it seems like there's a lot of ways that I could go in this game. And this game is one of those games where this could end easily end 13-6, right? Because both teams are not good. But also because the defenses aren't good, this game could end 42-38. I mean, like, it could be one of those games. So, like, I like identifying those high variance games. And for their prices and their ownership, I mean, we have DJ Moore at 6% owned. And if you told me DJ Moore had 12 for 120 and 2 touchdowns, like I'm not, if the beginning of the year, you wouldn't be shocked. People were like, okay, DJ Moore is an alpha. Right. Yeah. So like while everyone's getting off this Panthers train, maybe I'm going to get on. And, that's why it's GPP though. So I fully expect to crash and burn. I fully expect to open up the third quarter, we see PJ Walker at quarterback and all of my lineups are done.
Yeah. Yeah. My thinking with the Carolina side is like, I don't think Darnold or like Moore are going to be super high owned, but I'm not convinced that there's like a huge, huge ownership gap between Darnold and Ryan. Ridley is somewhat, I think, in a significantly ahead of any Carolina guys, but like, I'm not sure there's, I mean, I think Moore will be more owned than say Patterson or Pitts. And even looking at different games, like I'm not sure there's going to be a huge, have yet to see. I would guess as of now, we don't have a huge ownership gap between Darnold and Tannehill. I would expect that to change though with, Brown and therefore, Tannehill ownership going up, but like even like Wentz and, Darnold, I guess to me, like just in looking at some of the, you know, basic numbers, not seeing like huge ownership gap between Darnold and Moore, I guess, and then other options that to me seem a little more compelling.
But I mean, it's the same type of game. Like take the same lineup that I have and just put Ryan there instead of Darnold. I mean, like,
yeah,
we're just arguing that small thing, but I'm looking at this and if I told you there was a $4,700 wide receiver that was going to be 2-3% owned, that in the past 4 games had 9, 11, 7, and 11 targets, I'll go down with this. I'll go down with the Robbie Anderson ship. I mean, I think people have been trying to do that. And I think people are going to get off. I think this is the week people get off.
Yeah.
And I'm going to get on, and I'm going to be the one that explodes. But at least I'll try it out.
Yeah. No, I expect to have a decent bit of Robbie Anderson as kind of bring backs to the Atlanta side. And I guess you see Carolina as being kind of a double stackable team, right? With like more.
Right. I think that's Darnold. The reason why Darnold stands out more to me than Ryan, because I think I'm more likely to want to just two wide receivers stack it. And on the like Ridley plus Pitts is just more expensive. And then you got Patterson in there, a running back who's not really a running back. Like there's a lot of ways. And Gage is still there at 4,200. It feels like to me that making the Falcons stack with two guys, there are a lot of combinations and it's very easy to get it wrong. But on the Carolina side, it's to me, I just view it as three guys, Moore, Anderson and Hubbard. And like, so why not just use the quarterback from that side? So at least I could just, my bring back, if I even use one, but I probably would, could just be like, I don't have to worry if I could just use one of, I don't have to get the right two. I just have to get one. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. And of course, you know, the one on the Atlanta side is, even though it's going to be high ownership, like such a, you know, screaming value where I don't know, you feel kind of, at least I feel confident in kind of pegging Ridley as the one on the other side, as we're with Carolina.
Right. And at 18% ownership, I don't mind that ownership when I'm playing 2% on Robbie and 6% on Moore and 4% on Darnold. Like, I'm like, okay, the rest of my lineup is probably going to be, I mean, like that lineup, I can play Darrell Henderson and I can play Chris Godwin in that lineup. Like, it's the old school vomit stack approach of play the stack that not many people are playing and then just be able to just, now I just jam in the best plays around it. And as long as my stack gets there and the chalk hits, like I win all the money. So like, to me that it's an old, that the Carolina stack is the old school vomit stack on a slate that's more propense to do something like that. Cause we really don't have exorbitant high total games. And even in the games that we do have higher totals, the projection on those stacks are not, you know, are not like must have level types of percentages that you want to be like significantly over on.
Yeah. I got one vomit stack to close it out. Just they're showing up with good numbers. Having, to me, doesn't jump off the page. It's like, oh, that makes total sense. But we have a decent score.
Can I guess?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, go for it.
Okay, I'm gonna guess because you guessed mine. Is it Jacksonville?
It's not.
Okay. Now I'm interested. Okay.
Yeah. Denver. Just going like Bridgewater, Sutton. You know, you have Judy coming back.
Do you have Judy in your projections though?
Yeah, we do. Okay. So. You know, you would figure that would shave off, you know, some value from Sutton. I mean, is there going to be any lingering kind of protection of Judy, or is the assumption that he'll be full systems go? Because I mean, if he is, he's like
talking to me, I don't know. I just look on Twitter, yeah, whatever Twitter, yeah, tells me. I have no idea.
Yeah, yeah. I guess we'll have to find out closer to Sunday. But like to me, something like Bridgewater, Judy, Sutton makes decent sense. I guess on the Washington side, you know, you have a pretty clear bring back option in McLaurin. I mean, I guess people are still going to do kind of RSJ. To me, McLaurin would be the guy that I would want to target. You know, paying up for a clearly very talented and kind of voluminous receiver going up against tough defense. So that is one kind of game stack that, you know, I look at the total and it looks terrible. But they are showing up with decent numbers. So Jacksonville, you kind of, you know, yeah, talk me through Jacksonville.
Well, I'm not saying I like Jacksonville. I just think the Seahawks aren't the Seahawks anymore without Russell Wilson. So, like, I think that the ownership in this game is going to be primarily on the running backs. So, like, who's taking DK Metcalf? Who's playing $5,900 Marvin Jones? Like, these guys don't even project that well. I'm just looking at the ownership. The highest owned player in this game is going to be Robinson and Dan Arnold as a punt tight end. So if Dan Arnold's going to be high owned, why don't I play Lawrence, Arnold, Marvin Jones with DK Metcalf or something, leverage off of the running back ownership? I'm just looking from a strategic perspective. But, I mean, this game doesn't project well, though. So, like that's why, like, you said, I have a game. I'm like, maybe it's this from a strategy perspective, but the numbers say that this is not the type of game that's going to be, you know, 60, 70 points.
Yeah. I don't have them too much, or I don't have any of the kind of games as a stack showing up. Do have some exposure to Arnold sneaking in as just kind of a one-off type play. But yeah, not a game I'm super interested in stacking up.
Okie doke. And people could get all those statistics that you send out in a Substack, right? I know you're always behind, right? You're always behind on the week. That'll be going out soon. Where can people find that?
Yeah, you can find it. Just follow the ASA Twitter. We'll publish it. To Substack. If you just Google 5 minute ASA is the name of the newsletter. Should pop up either at or near the top of a Google search. But I find Twitter to be pretty reliable. Like we'll be tweeting out when that goes live. We'll get that out this afternoon. Just got to tighten up some things and probably also make some adjustments for that Julio news. But yeah, follow us on Twitter, AS Analytics DFS, and we'll link off to that. It's $10 a month for the Substack, which is written content as well as the static, I guess, output of some of the tools and models and simulations that we have in place. If you want access to like the more dynamic version of the tools from which those numbers are generated, you can subscribe to the site at advancedsportsanalytics.com. So if you want kind of the cliff notes, Substack, I think a good affordable way to go if you want to be in the weeds with kind of all that we are putting together. Subscribing to the site potentially could be a better fit for you.
And you could find this show, if you're not watching on YouTube, like and subscribe, obviously, if you're on YouTube. It's always on our Roto Grinders Daily Fantasy Football podcast feed. So you could just search for that in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, the RG Daily Fantasy Football podcast feed, to get this show, as well as all the other NFL shows that we put out throughout the course of the week. So for Stuart Gibson at Advanced Sports Analytics and me, Jordan Cooper, here at RotoGrinders, that has been the Advanced Sports Analytics Show here on RotoGrinders.com.